You're listening to the Podcast Network. Listen, learn, evolve.
Alright, it's another two-web crew. Who wants to kick this bitch off?
Well, we have our resident Nick, the VC boy who's left Wollongong and his PlayStation and his packet of cigarettes, and he's travelled how many hours, Nick? 20, 24 hours. He's landed in Atherton, California, staying at the TechCrunch Ranch that we've seen in so many barbecues. And, Nick, what's happening over there? You were just talking about doing podcasts and having a Red Bull. Range of activities.
I want to know how come you didn't get to have lunch with Bill Gates when Arrington did, mate.
Let's go a few steps back. I actually took a ship out here that took 6 weeks and stopped off in Puerto Rico on the way. So it was all 24 hours. I didn't get to go to Las Vegas. I'm just busy with other stuff.
Bloody code, don't you hate code, mate? You should be in Vegas playing the machines.
TechCrunch is taking up enough time as it is, so time-wise, I couldn't afford to go out, but when I saw the pictures come through live on my Flickr feed, I was kicking myself, needless to say, especially because the conversation was about online storage. And, it's obviously something that I play in that OmniDrive.com, so I would have sat there and I would have given Bill Gates a half-hour demo of OmniDrive while he ate his steak. Mike's over there. Sorry?
The online storage angle is that Mike said he asked Bill about whether they were going to do Office 12 in some sort of Ajax online kind of thing, and Bill, he said, basically just avoided the question, but did say that he thought people were paying too much attention to online stuff. That usually means whenever Microsoft says that the market's paying too much attention to something, it usually means that they don't have anything for us.
This is really interesting, actually, because it shows a bit about what we focus on and what somebody like Bill Gates focuses on. We sit around and we talk about online word processors and doing everything online because it's very appealing to us, and Bill Gates will just come into a conversation and shoot that right down and say, I don't think anybody wants to use that. So it shows a bit of the echo chamber effect our community. I think that's what they're taking from that.
The Bill's thinking on that is the same as Bill's thinking on most other things, is that it's not of interest to Microsoft until it's, a $5 billion space. When it's a $5 billion market, then it's worth Bill getting interested in it. But, guys like us are on the bleeding edge of this stuff.
Yeah, that's right. And we pioneer the different spaces, and then these guys come around and pick it up by either acquiring or by imitating. It's not to say that, innovation doesn't happen within these big corporations, but it was Clayton Christensen who first sort of said or realized or noticed that interruptive technologies more often than not, disruptive technologies, sorry, more often than not come out of startups. But it is interesting to note that they are looking at online storage, which isn't too much of a surprise.
Well, it's not new either. You've been able to create a MSN web store for many years now.
Yeah, that's right. I guess what he's talking about now is just broader adoption of it in the small business market, storing their Word documents and so forth online, as DVDs online.
They've been able to do that for years, though. I mean, they bought a company, can't even remember what they're called, eDrive or something like that, bloody 5-6 years ago, where you could do that. You could do file save as out of Word or out of Excel and save it to your online store. But it just didn't get used much because it was a bit clunky, and you had to use Hotmail to sign in, and it took 10 minutes to actually log into the drive where you wanted to save the bloody thing, rather than having it as some sort of a native storage in the cloud.
Hey, Nick, have you heard any Oh, sorry, I was just going to say quickly, related to acquisitions, have you heard anything about Google and their Writerly acquisition? I mean, talking about online word processors, which Google bought one, basically. I just don't know, since you've got on the ship and gone through Puerto Rico and stuff and then ended up in Athens with Mr. Vegas, whether, yeah, the online word processor, whether it's $1 million, $5 million, and also what the plans are for it, what you think the plans are too.
Under five. And I'll probably use some of the technology as part of the page creation, page creator tech that they came out with a couple of weeks ago,
which
we did a story on. It was interesting at the time when the page creator story came up and people were comparing it to Writerly. And then a few weeks later, had the Writerly acquisition come up. The theory behind the page creation, which is basically being able to go on the web and create a page, is that with the whole Google base, people will be able to publish content on Google, sell things, describe things, have their own personal websites, and so forth. And so Writerly would play a part there. You know, there's more than one reason usually to acquire a company. Sometimes you don't even want the technology, you just want the team. Sometimes you want the technology itself. Sometimes you acquire so one of your competitors doesn't acquire, which
profit.
I don't know how likely that was in this case. But for instance, the Writerly backend is ASP.net, so I'm pretty sure that they're looking purely for the front end skills out of the Writerly team in doing JavaScript, very heavy JavaScript Ajax apps, which we know, you know, Google being a pure web based play, they need to have the best people in the world who can do that sort of stuff. But you know, from what I hear in terms of the figures, I heard it was under five. Mill, which is all rumor, and I don't really get into the gossip much, but that would sort of make sense.
Cool. What were you saying, Cam?
Oh, nothing. Oh, no, I was just going to say, let's be clear that Microsoft doesn't want people thinking about the online storage stuff, the online versions of Office productivity apps, because they don't have a solution, and they actually trialed a Microsoft Office online via a browser solution quite a few years ago. I think it was sort of around Office XP, something like that. Might have been even been a little bit earlier. I remember it was on a limited trial, and our product manager in Australia at the time made a big hoo-ha about it and was doing a lot of talk about it, and then it very quietly went away. And when I was still at Microsoft, I was trying to find out why it went away, and no one would tell me anything because they were probably scared it would end up on my blog. But I was like, you know, what happened? Oh, I think the response at the time was, well, customers didn't want it. It's kind of like Telstra and the broadband thing, right? Yeah, customers don't want it. Yeah, their testing, user feedback was they don't want it. Right, yeah.
Yeah, in regards to the Writerly acquisition, at the time there were a number of blog posts that came out, a number of stories that were talking about the death of Microsoft Office, Google are going to take this space on. Those people are either living in a fantasy world or they've never used Writerly, one of the two. There is no way on earth that Microsoft would ever let Google get that close to what they're making, you know, 80 to 90% profit margins on. I mean, it's the most economical software production team on earth at the moment and the most profitable. And for a Google, you know, 5 million or whatever acquisition of Writerly to threaten that is just fantasy land.
Well, but it's not about fantasy land, right? It's about early adopters, and it's about creating a new way of doing things and building a brand around that. You know, Google went into the search space when everyone else had the search space stitched up, and they very quickly developed the dominant brand in that space. I think there's a huge dissatisfaction with client-side Office applications at a user level. Now, Microsoft's, you know, got a big presence in the corporate space, and that's not going to go away quickly, but, you know, you got to look at where Microsoft was 10 years ago and how they got rid of Lotus 1-2-3, how they got rid of WordPerfect and those sorts of plays when Microsoft was seen as the distant second cousin to some of those apps. They came
That's what they're very good at doing.
Well, they were very good at doing it. And what's happening now is that Google's actually could potentially be turning that model against Microsoft. The good enough solution that's cheaper?
Okay. Now, look, 37 Signals came out and said the best methodology is that you implement, you know, 10% of a product because that's all anybody ever uses, ignoring the fact that each different user uses a different 10%. You know, putting that aside, Microsoft's already doing that. They have Notepad, they have Works, they have WordPad, then they have Word. People still buy Word. So this theory of you only need to implement 10% of the desktop product on the web and you're going to destroy that market is fallacy. It's wrong.
But Nick, what about the I totally agree in the enterprise sales market where Google Enterprise are just, I mean, you know, we've probably got bigger enterprise sales between us and Google. But on the consumer side, I mean, how much time do we all spend in Gmail? You know, how much do we store? Every document I've got now between my Macs, I'm using Gmail to, you know, to find it. I'm running my major pieces of writing also within Gmail, or I'm writing them within Flickr to go to my blog. I mean, so I'm, and then start of the year I installed OpenOffice because I can save to Word or to PowerPoint. So I send those to clients; they just think it's PowerPoint. And I got away with not using Office for 2 years, basically, after using it for 10.
Good on you. The question is Microsoft going to let 100% of the market do that?
We're not talking about 100%. We're not talking black and white. We all know that the one when you're talking about things this big, you're talking 1-2% is just a huge impact on a business. And I totally agree in terms of enterprise sales, where most of the Microsoft products are, including Office. Anyway, I mean, I'm not a pro Google thing. I just think it is. I think when you look at metrics like minutes spent on applications in the day of a consumer, people are spending more of it on the web versus a desktop application.
Okay, well, you know, the whole reason why you're using OpenOffice is purely cost. You save yourself an office license. If that becomes enough of a threat to Microsoft, all they need to do is create Word Home Edition or something that retails for $40, and they'll preserve their top end of the market. The analogy that I used when this first came around was when Intel were being threatened by Cyrix and AMD a while ago, and what Intel said was, what they thought to themselves internally was, this is great, you know, we get to move out of the sector of the market where our profit margins aren't as high, we can report higher profit margins and focus on the enterprise space, we'll let these guys take care of the consumer space. It also frees up our production facility so that we can create chips that we make 50-60% profit margins on. You know, they ran that strategy for about a year or two, then they suddenly...
History is Silicon Valley. But don't you think people are spending more time on web apps? Isn't that the whole point of the OmniDrive play?
What they realized was that because Cyrix and AMD were taking at the lower end of the market, that this was creating a bridge for them into their sort of cream end of the market. So what they did is just, you know, created the Celeron process, which they make no money off, purely as a blocker into the part of the market. And Microsoft are going to do the exact same thing if need be. You know, they're not stupid. They've controlled this market for a long time, and they will for a while longer. And that's what I think a lot of Office Live is about. Office Live is about not so much cannibalizing a lot of what they've got at the moment, but it's protecting what they've got, scooping up those people that will, you know, right now go and use OpenOffice or something else and scooping them into at least something that's under the Microsoft umbrella so that they can then drive you to, you know, whatever else they've got under that same umbrella as well.
You know, I think you're discounting the fact that there's a very huge sector in the marketplace, and this includes corporate CIOs, that are just waiting for an opportunity to move away from Microsoft. There's a huge segment of the corporate market, the enterprise space, that are just waiting for Gartner to give them the nod on a whole range of technology.
Yeah, this is the same thing predicament Telstra have. You know, and they said, well, they didn't say it publicly, but the strategy is 40% of the market are always going to go with the incumbent, 20% are always going to be against us. The 40% in the middle are going to swing either way. It's that 40% in the middle that we're going to focus our attention on. And Microsoft are going to do the exact same thing. They're going to write off a certain section of the market. They're the people who are always going to use Firefox, always going to use OpenOffice, always run Linux. Then you're going to get that the swingers in the middle, which Firefox has managed to take some of right now, and you know, in the office space, I don't think anybody's made inroads into it. Maybe OpenOffice just a bit. They're going to fight over that part of it. They're always going to have the incumbent control of, you know, 70, 80, maybe even higher percent of the market. To get them out of that and to chew into that is going to be even more difficult.
But think about this, mate. Think about, and I know this is a pretty long straw, but think about a Ubuntu PC. Google goes to the OEMs and says, look, instead of paying Microsoft to put their operating system on the PC, you put our operating system on, we'll cut you in on a couple of years of AdSense revenue. We'll have AdSense integrated into desktop. By the way, we've got all these productivity apps that, you know, you can ship free as well, put it on the box. It's not very, and you'd go after the consumer space or the small business space first. The small business space, I think, is the biggest concern here. The vast majority, I mean, where Microsoft's throwing a lot of effort in terms of a sales push is the SMB space. I think their biggest group now globally is the small, medium enterprise sales space. It's bigger than the enterprise space. Because, you know, most of the software out there, a lot of it is counterfeit. Fraudulent.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Yeah.
And those people don't want to spend money. So there's a big piece of the market that Microsoft's expecting to get revenue growth from that they can go after.
Yeah.
Plus, if you've got, you know, corporates that are always looking to figure out how to squeeze an extra buck out of their IT budget, I don't know.
Well, there are two things that can happen there. You know, they can either give those people, make no money off of that market just to put in a barrier, or they can try and make a little bit of money out of that market.
Well, they're saying advertising. Life.com's pushing advertising as a sort of a, you know, application for revenue.
Have you looked at Xbox?
Microsoft does go into that market. They've got NT Small Business Server, which costs orders of magnitude less than the enterprise versions. They've got academic editions. They've got XP Home. They play at every price differential, and the features aren't too different. It's just a question of which area of the market are you targeting.
Which area of the market? You got to keep in mind, though, that Windows and Office are still... I mean, I don't know what the hard numbers are today, but I'm taking a guess that Windows and Office are still somewhere in the vicinity of 75 to 80% of their revenues and an equivalent amount of their profit.
Yeah.
Now,
of the six product divisions, two are profitable, apparently.
Yeah, it's those two. And they're funding everything else. Maybe Halo's making a profit now.
Not yet.
But they sold it.
I don't think MSN is. Xbox definitely is. And Xbox is going to be a big gravestone, I think, in the long term.
At least when Redmond. I was there, you know, the Windows and Office divisions were funding everything else. Now, if they get... And they've never had any serious threat to that. You know, they've always been taking everybody else's market share. If somebody comes along and starts to force them to do discounting, significant discounting, both in the consumer, SME, and the enterprise space to maintain their market share, you're going to see revenues and profits take a hit. Their share
who's that going to be?
5 years. Well, I don't know.
The only reason we can say that it's never being threatened is because we've never seen a threat, because they kill it before it even notice it.
No, mate, I was there. I worked there. I had friends in the Windows product team. I had friends in the Office product team. We used to talk about this all day long. They've never had a threat. It looked like, you know, 5 years ago, it looked like IBM could have been a threat when they started.
OpenOffice. Come on.
Sun.
Not a threat.
Sun and OpenOffice. The Linux community. I mean, the Linux community have obviously, you know, they've got some good successes in mostly against Sun, right, Rich?
Yeah.
No, Rich isn't on the call, is he? Sorry, Rich. If Rich was here, you know, he would agree.
He would back you up.
But they had no enterprise sales focus, really, except IBM. And IBM could have put some focus. So they were doing a lot of hoopla 5 years ago, saying they were investing money in Linux, etc. But then they really never pushed forward with it. I will agree. I think I believe there were some discussions between Microsoft and IBM to get IBM to back off there. I don't have any hard data to back that up, just a few conversations that I heard along the way. But, you know, they really haven't had a serious threat. Sun was never a serious threat in this space. By the time Sun started to think about it, you know, McNeely's head was already so far up his ass he couldn't tell China.
Okay, so who's the serious threat going to be? What are the serious chain of events that's going to bring Microsoft down?
In the consumer, in the home user and the SMB space, it's looking like Google. In the enterprise space, I don't know. It could be a combination, you know, a partnership between a Google and somebody with an enterprise sales force.
Aren't people shifting to Linux? Aren't businesses in general shifting to Linux if they can?
I think Linux is still a bit of a big jump for, you know, your average business person who's, you know,
that's what Telstra.
Telstra.
That's what Telstra were threatening. That's why Obama had to come down under.
I'm a big supporter of open source and a big supporter of Firefox and BSD and Linux. I'm just grounded in reality of the uphill battle that might not even have to happen.
I totally understand your point. I hate these arguments where people say, Microsoft's dead or this is dead or that. But I can tell you having worked at MSN, which was a joint venture, that's separate. But having worked at Census at Telstra, every year, the advertising, not the advertising, but the usage of the Yellow Pages book goes down 2% a year. Now, that 2%, you don't know when these businesses are this big, mate, 1 or 2%, it hurts. It really hurts. So, this whole it's going to go out of business thing, I just think it's ridiculous as well. But we're talking big cap stuff here, so we're talking 1 or 2% movements are huge, you know. So that's the only point I'd throw in.
Yeah, Yellow Pages isn't exactly a defendable business. I mean, I could literally sit down and rewrite the Yellow Pages. They would be able to sue me based on copyright law, but in terms of a defensible business, it's not really. I like Cameron's post about
it's a monopoly. It's a monopoly.
Well, yeah, they've been granted a monopoly. I agree with what Cameron was saying in one of his blog posts, I can't remember which one, about the Yellow Pages being about connecting people, not just being a list of references or pointers to somebody else, and they didn't catch on to that. They're going to die so long, you know. If they realized this 5 years ago, they might have done something about the money machine that they were sitting on. But now it's slowly withering away and being replaced.
But see, the withering away stuff just again isn't based on fact, because if you look at the top three online, the most online advertising revenue in this country is made by Telstra and Census. It makes much more than Google in Australia. It makes much more than even 9MSN in Australia. Yeah. So,
from what I know, Yellow Pages.
They've had a 50-year head start, Ben.
Yellow Pages. I'm not trying to debate a monopoly and whether it's valid or not. I'm saying it exists. It's fact. This is something I heard. Our business is dead.
A couple of days ago was that the amount of money being poured into Yellow Pages and classified advertising in the USA is still bigger than the total amount of money being poured into online advertising.
Yeah, of course.
Hmm. But the internet's what? I mean, in a public sense, where we've just hit our sort of 10th, 11th birthday, these things are just starting to come together. I mean, in the directory space, in the social connectivity space, we're only just starting to see the emergence of possible replacements to a White Pages or a Yellow Pages through some of the social networking stuff that's getting off the ground. Now, it's going to take another 10 years for that to make it into mainstream consciousness and awareness. But 10 years isn't a long time. It takes the board of Census 10 years to figure out, where they're going to have their next board meeting. I mean, this isn't...
But look at the flip side of that debate. Everyone's going, who will I sell my company to? Couldn't be bothered spending more than 2 years on it. I don't know, just 8 entrepreneurs in Australia on an email list. Who are they going to go to?
None of us are selling. We're hard.
I'm not us. The other eight. The B list eight. The B list eight. The B team.
Yeah. Nine, Ben.
The B9. B9, like the vitamin.
Hey, I keep getting dirty emails from people asking why they haven't been invited onto 2Web. What is our official policy on that this week?
Web 2.0 entrepreneurs who blog, do they meet the criteria at A level?
Well, that's debatable. If somebody's got a blog and they don't have a job, does that make them a Web 2.0 entrepreneur?
No, they've got to at least, they can, like we said, they can be in the doll, but they've got to say, they've got to be able to make something up and con us that it's actually a business.
They've got AdSense running on it.
That's not a, I'm with Nick, that's not a business. That's not defendable. That's not defendable.
Don't drag me into this.
Nick, that's not defendable. No, that's not defendable.
Defensible, actually, I think the word is.
Defensible, are you? Duncan, is that sense of business?
Right, sort of, no, but I mean, I know you guys always take the piss out of it, but I mean, if you actually look at some of the different models around, we're having some great returns out of AdSense. So I'll defend AdSense to the hilt, particularly now they're starting to send our checks out to us and DHL envelopes and whatnot. But no, I mean, look, we don't want, you know, any man and his dog can set up a blog and put some AdSense ad sites, and then what we need is people looking to set up something bigger to build an empire, if you like.
A weblogs empire, eh? Okay, listen, it's 6:33. We told Jason Calacanis to be here at 6. He has dissed us, gentlemen. He has dissed us, which is just about what I'd fucking expect from Calacanis.
Well, I guess that means we can talk about him now.
He's in a lot of trouble today. You've all read about the whole Engadget Mogfest scandal?
Nick was telling me about it before.
I saw the ice cream cake. What was that?
The ice cream cake?
Right, they had Engadget birthday party. What's the scandal today?
Basically, Engadget had taken a story from some other sort of major tech site, removed the watermark and removed the link, but they originally actually had the watermark on the picture up there. Someone had then come along and basically edited those links out and took the watermark out after it had been published, and they've been called out on it, and they're getting a fair bit of flack as well.
Wow. Apparently, Peter Rojas maintains a blacklist of sites, sources that they aren't allowed to credit. It would have been great to ask Jason about what's actually going on there, but we obviously can't. But he'll probably get back to us.
I think Jason's also, the big thing has been he might be running Netscape and turning Netscape into a dig.com service. Do you remember recently he said that dig.com, he could get a couple of high school programmers and basically build it, you know, in, I don't know, a couple of months or something. I mean, have you heard, Nick, the rumor from deep in Atherton that Netscape, dig.com and Jason Calacanis?
Yeah, but, you know, Jason has set out challenges before, such as creating a top 500 blog index that he was going to pay $100,000 for, which he never ended up paying. The YouTube challenge, you know, two hackers and Red Bull, 5 days, whatever, he didn't live up to. So, you know, what's next? Do we expect anything to come out of it? Track record.
He's been talking about free podcast hosting on AOL in return for them just chucking in some advertising.
I've heard that model somewhere, actually.
He sent me an email last week, or a few days ago, actually, asking if how much I paid for my hosting each month. And I told him, and I never got an answer back, but there you go.
It was good. I enjoyed having Jason on. I thought he was a good guest.
Yeah, thanks very much, Jason.
His responses were sort of concise and to the point. He was a lot more polite than people had said, and I actually thought he had a really good grasp of the issues.
He didn't really dominate the conversation like he normally does. I think, you know, maybe in his newfound wealth, he's learning a little bit of maturity. And thank you very much for joining us, Jason Calacanis.
He actually now podcasts by proxy. He sent a representative onto the podcast to speak on his behalf.
Oh, my God. No. Nick was in Puerto Rico, and Nick is Jason Calacanis. It's like he's... Oh, my God.
I've had facial reconstructive surgery.
That's what all this Microsoft and defendable stuff is. You're really talking about AOL when you said Microsoft. Oh, you've been here a long, Jason. We'll be speaking to you anyway, mate.
Okay, yeah, that's a wrap, you bitches.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
This is about the fourth podcast I've done today. I'm over it. Our guest hasn't turned up.
Two web crew, hitting it hardcore in the house. Word up.
Hey, Lois, look at me, I'm podcasting on TPN.
Interesting stories about travel-related people, products, places, and ideas. The TPN Travel Show, travel.podcastnetwork.com. Take the first step on your next travel experience.
Real power can't be given.
It must be taken.